and welcome to the Learn Chinese Insights podcast brought to you by ChineseTrack.com. Every week, we interview expats from around the world who've been learning Chinese as a second language to find out how they learned it, what worked and what didn't, and how it benefits them in their daily life. So in today's episode, I'm happy to have Fraser Stewart. So Fraser, before we get started, can you give us just a brief introduction in Chinese? Tell us where you've come from, what you're doing here, and then we'll continue the interview after that.
我的中文名字是梁浩天，我叫Fraser. 我从英国来了，我现在住在台湾一年半左右，我现在是英文老师，我住在新竹，我是英文老师在新竹。
All right, thank you. So you said you, in your intro, you've come from England and you've come to Taiwan?
The UK, yeah.
Okay.
Actually from Scotland.
Okay. So can you give me some background? So when you're in Scotland, what prompted the move to Taiwan?
So before I came to Taiwan this time, this isn't my first time in Taiwan, but before I came to Taiwan this time, I was working as a patent examiner for the Intellectual Property Office in the UK. And I've been doing that for about 8 years. And I was just kind of getting a bit bored with it. And I wanted to try something new. And I'd been thinking about coming to Taiwan for a long time. I actually have plans to retire in Taiwan in like 20 years' time. But I was just kind of getting tired of doing patent examining. And I was just thinking about other career options. And I thought that I really enjoyed teaching. I found that when I was working as a patent examiner, part of my job was training and teaching other people things, and I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I thought, you know, I really like languages. Like, I like the English language. I like grammar. I like studying, being good at English. And I also like learning languages. I've learned Chinese as well. So I thought, why not be an English teacher? That was kind of my reasoning. So that's kind of, that was what kind of set it off.
You'd already learned some Chinese while in Scotland?
Yeah, so actually I started learning Chinese in 2008. That was when it first started. So I've been married twice. My first wife was from China, from the north of China, called Liaoning province, which is a bit north of Beijing. So in 2008, we went to visit her family, and this was just before the Beijing Olympics happened. So it was around about May, and at that time I couldn't speak any Chinese at all, no Chinese, and her family couldn't speak English, and that kind of inspired me. And I thought, and I remembered I'd watched the documentary because I was studying maths at the time. And I watched the documentary about another guy from the UK who studied maths, who had a Chinese wife, and he learned Chinese. I got to thinking, I was like, well, you know, I should try learning Chinese as well. So that was kind of how it got started back in 2008, when I sort of first started it.
So what was the approach for learning Chinese?
So I actually remembered when I learned about this other guy who speak Chinese, he learned to read and write Chinese characters, and he learned to read and write very quickly. So I thought maybe that's the best way to do it, is to learn to read and write. So when we were in China, I went to a bookstore in Beijing, and I found a book that taught you how to read and write the 400 most common Chinese characters, which covers about 80%, I want to say, of Chinese characters that actually get used. And that was kind of how I started. I got these books. They call them, I think it's called Tianziben. So Tian means field in Chinese. And it's like, it looks like a little square grid, you know, like four little squares. Mm-hmm. And so they have these like notebooks that are like that, which is why they call it Tianziben. Mm. And you write the characters in the four little squares. And that's like what children use to learn Chinese in China. And I think they use it here in Taiwan as well. Mm-hmm. And I got that, and I just start practicing writing Chinese characters, you know, like over and over and over and over again. And the book also helps you by practicing reading Chinese as well. And that was just kind of how it got started, basically.
So this learning how to read and write, did that also help you with communication? like speaking and such?
Oh, yeah, it does. Because I think one of the major things about Chinese language is the characters. Like, I've met many foreigners here who tell me they want to learn Chinese, but they don't want to learn characters.
Mm-hmm.
But you really have to know the characters. At least for me personally, this is how it kind of works in my brain.
Uh-huh.
Because when I'm speaking, I'm actually thinking about the characters that I want to say. So when I say it, because I know what I'm saying, it's kind of how other people understand what you've said, if that makes sense. Because I sort of think about the actual characters I want to say, and that's how I kind of talk when I'm speaking Chinese. So, and it also helps you to distinguish words, because there's many words and many characters in Chinese that all have very similar or the same pronunciations.
Yeah.
So knowing the characters helps you in your brain to distinguish the actual vocabulary and the actual words. So I think like learning the characters is a fundamental skill that you need to know when you're studying Chinese.
So when people speak to you in your brain, it's being transcribed into characters.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh. Like I think about what the characters are and then I know what's being said. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when I'm hearing it. That's kind of how it works in my brain as well. Yeah.
Basically, all right. Yeah. So you started with notebook. Have you used any technology like flashcards and spaced repetition and those kind of things?
No, I never did that. I just learned by reading and writing and listening, like lots and lots of practice, just reading and writing over and over again. I've been kind of gifted, if you like, with quite a good memory.
Okay.
So it doesn't take me a long time to remember new characters. If I see it like 3 or 4 times, then I can usually remember it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really have to use flashcards or things of that nature myself. It was just lots of reading, lots of writing. Mm-hmm. Like I also find when I write it down, it helps me to kind of retain it. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of all I did basically.
So when you came to Taiwan, so of course here it's traditional. So was there any difference in process moving from simplified to traditional?
No, not really. I think it was actually very easy. So basically all I did is I bought a book, and I've actually got here, I can show you.
Uh-huh.
I bought this book. It's called Wind in the Willows.
Okay.
It's a Chinese translation of the original book from English. Okay. And I literally just sat down and read it. And then when I came to a new character, I would look it up. At the time, there weren't online dictionaries. The first time I came to Taiwan was actually in 2010.
Uh-huh.
So at that time, I didn't have access to online dictionaries. So I had I had a dictionary that I bought in China, which has both simplified and traditional characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a character and think, what's that? And then I look it up in the dictionary and I'd see the simplified one next to it. I go, oh, that's what it is. And then I just learned it that way. Mm-hmm. I just automatically remembered it because I knew the word, I knew the simplified. So then when I saw the traditional, I instantly went, oh, that's what it is.
Right.
And it just stuck in my head. That was kind of how I learned traditional characters.
Now, do you find the reading and writing skills go together? Because in day-to-day life, you rarely have to actually write things. But some people find it builds the memory.
No, it's not really. One of the things that's a weakness of mine is I'm actually quite bad at writing.
Okay.
I would say reading and writing are definitely separate skills.
Right.
Because I find it, you're right. Like I can write Chinese, I can use like phones to type it out. But if it's actually like physically writing it down, I often struggle to remember it.
Right. So now when you're learning new characters, do you still practice how to write or do you just try to remember the strokes in your head?
I do both. I practice writing it and I usually try and read it 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
In a row, and then once I've read it like 4 or 5 times, then I'll sort of remember it. But I usually try to write them down as well,
right?
To try and help me to remember it.
Yeah.
So I do both.
All right. So going back to when you first started learning, and you said your initial focus was through reading and writing. So what about things like tones and speaking and stuff? How did you find that?
So I was actually kind of lucky. So when I started learning Chinese seriously, my ex-wife is actually very, very good at Chinese. And she spent a lot of time with me actually drilling me on pronunciation, basic pronunciation, tones, that sort of thing. She spent a long time like teaching me how to speak the tones. And it was actually quite a frustrating process. I used to get really frustrated because I'd say something,
yeah,
and then and I think I was saying it correctly. Like I'd say a tone, like E or stone,
yeah,
and she would say no, it's not like that, and she would do it over and over again. And I used to get really frustrated because I'd say like, what's the difference?
Yeah,
so but like she could hear the difference, but I couldn't. Right. But through that process, my pronunciation was really quite good when I started. Right. Actually learning to read and write, I had the pronunciation already kind of pretty clear in my head.
Yeah.
If you try and hear the difference, like E, 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 like uh-huh. the four tones.
Yeah.
Like when you start learning, they all sound exactly the same. And then so you've got someone telling you, like, say E, and yeah. you go E, and they say, no, it's E. And you're going, but what's the difference? You know, like I'm saying E, and it's like, no, you're not. You're saying E, and it's like, That's very, very frustrating. But that process helped me a lot with my pronunciation. I was very lucky in that respect to have someone that was actually willing, a native speaker that was willing to sit down and do that with me and actually get my pronunciation and tones like very, very good.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's something you'd recommend, like drill that on early on so that kind of stays with you later on.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're learning new characters, like if you look it up in a dictionary, it'll have, you know, the pinyin or the zhuyin. Because, mm-hmm. you know, in China, they use pinyin, mm-hmm. which is like Roman letters.
Yeah.
And in Taiwan, they use zhuyin, which is something else.
Mm-hmm.
I can't read zhuyin, by the way. I can only read pinyin. But
yeah.
When I see a character and I see the pinyin, I know instantly how to pronounce it. Like, I don't have to think about it. I just know exactly how to say it.
Right.
So I can just practice saying it in my head a few times and then kind of learn, like, I know that character.
Right. So when you type things and stuff, you use pinyin?
I do, yeah, I do.
Right.
I've had Taiwanese ex-girlfriends and I've had a Taiwanese ex-wife who tried to get me to learn zhuyin, but I just kind of haven't been able to do it. I don't know.
You're kind of set in your ways now, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad, but true, yeah.
Uh-huh. So now you're teaching out here. So being able to speak Chinese at your level, how does that help you out? Do you use it in your day-to-day?
Oh, yeah. So it helps me out a lot. So, like, just as an example, like, I found this apartment that mm-hmm. I'm living in right now. This is my apartment that you see behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a website. It's called 591.com that is Taiwan for finding lettings and stuff.
Yeah.
And I could just call them up and say, I want to look at the apartment. And, you know, and then when I came here, I can talk to them about it, ask questions like, how do you pay the water bill? How do you pay the electricity bill? Is there parking? Is there a management fee? You know, these kind of questions.
You have to rely on anyone else.
Exactly. So, like, if I want to move, I can just call someone up. Or if I need anything, I can just call people.
So, in that situation, when you called, did he know you're a foreigner?
Yeah, they did. I usually get that question, are you a foreigner? And I'll say, yes.
So they can tell by the accent or something.
Yeah, they can. Although one person asked me if I was a Hua Qiao. I don't know if you know what that means.
Like an ABC kind of.
Yeah. That means overseas Chinese. And I said, no, I'm white. But I took that as a compliment.
Yeah.
And also I was able to get a credit card very easily because I could just go into the bank and the guy just talked to me in Chinese through all the different deals, the percentages, et cetera. What do you want to use the credit card for? I want to buy stuff online, et cetera, et cetera. Because other foreigners have asked me, how did you get a credit card? And I walked into the bank and just said, I'd like a credit card. And then they gave me a meeting and we talked about it and then I got a credit card. You know,
because usually many situations, as soon as they find out you're a foreigner, they don't want to continue. It's not worth the hassle. So in your case, probably because, here's someone we could communicate with. So suddenly that hassle has gone down or something.
Yeah, exactly. From my understanding, when I've met foreigners here who are married, they typically will use their husband or wife to mm-hmm. do stuff for them because obviously they can call people. And, you know, if I need something, like I need a cleaner or I need repairs or, you know, anything, like I can just do it on my own. I don't need anyone to
help me. You're completely capable, right?
And also I use it at work. I'm an English teacher, so so people say, well, you're not supposed to speak English, and I don't, but some of the staff, like the office staff, don't really speak English, so I can talk to them about stuff as well and that sort of thing. So it's definitely helped me a lot to settle in Taiwan because there's the language barrier to do kind of basic daily things.
Understood, yeah. So looking back at your whole journey and the process that you went through, Would you do anything differently in terms of how you studied and what worked and what didn't if you were to go back and do it again?
Yeah, I think I would. Like, one thing I did, which I kind of regret now, is I didn't pay enough attention to the tones of different characters. So I kind of rely more on context when I'm speaking rather than the specific tones. So my pronunciation isn't as good as it could be.
Mm.
And it's kind of difficult now because, like, now I know somewhere around 3,500 to 4,000 characters.
Mm.
And it's difficult to go back through and relearn 4,000 characters and sort of try to remember the tones for 4,000 characters, if that makes sense. So I kind of rely more on just saying it like the way I hear it from other people.
Yeah.
Rather than actually generally knowing the tone, the actual tone. That's one thing I would do. The other thing I would also focus more on is what they call is tingxie. So that means you hear it and you write it.
Mm.
It's listening and writing. So that means someone says something and you can write it down. And I didn't focus on that enough either. And I kind of wish I had, because it's like a skill I'm kind of missing. And I really wish I could do that.
So how would that have helped, or what?
I don't know. It's probably more of a pride thing rather than anything else, where you feel like you really want to know the language as well as you can. And you feel like if you're missing a skill, you're not totally kind of, you haven't got a complete knowledge.
So that particular skill is being able to write down all the characters that were spoken to you.
Yeah, like someone says a sentence and I can just write it down
without
thinking about it. That's another thing. And I think I also would have spent more time consuming Chinese media, because I kind of, like, I had friends, like when I was in Shanghai and I was studying Chinese, I had friends that used to watch TV in Chinese, and I never did that because I was kind of lazy about it. And I kind of regret it. And like, having conversations with people is fine. Like, I can have lots of conversations with people and talk about pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. But if I'm like watching TV or watching like movies or things, they're using like, they've got like strong accents and they're not saying things. It sounds different to when someone's actually speaking to you. So sometimes I kind of struggle to understand that. And I kind of think, yeah, I wish I'd spent more time.
It's but something, isn't that I'm something you now. Can do now if you wanted to?
Yeah, I do it now. I got on Netflix just to do that, but I wish I'd kind of done it in the early days. It would be better now than it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, and the nice thing here is all media is subtitled, right? So you can kind of see what people are saying.
So I do spend a lot of time like watching Japanese animes, the Chinese dubs of Japanese animes, because I quite like that. Like there's certain movies I can watch and I can just understand the whole thing without any difficulty, and other movies are very, very difficult. And I was told that's because, like, I tried watching a movie called Farewell My Concubine in Chinese and I couldn't understand it like at all, and then people listened to it and they said, yeah, that's because it's in Beijing dialect.
Ooh.
So that's why you're struggling with it. Oh, okay. Sometimes it does depend on the movie, but yeah, I just kind of wish I hadn't been quite as lazy about studying outside of class when I was actually studying in Shanghai. I wish I'd put a bit more effort in than I had
originally. Would you say like your Chinese right now has peaked, or do you still work on it and look?
I still work on it. I think it's plateaued in a sense. So improvements are a bit slower than they were. But I mean, if in terms of levels, like, so there's the standard kind of language levels. You've got A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2. And I think I've been told my Chinese is around about the C1 level, which is very advanced. And I'd like to get it up to the C2 level, which is basically native. So yeah, I do spend a lot of time working on
it. So what's the process to get there?
It's basically just consuming media. So I read books, I watch TV shows, I talk to people. I actually have a textbook as well that's like the C2 level textbook that I try to spend some time studying. But again, I'm kind of a bit lazy about it because it's like you do the exercises and then you see how many exercises are in the book and you kind of go, I don't want to do this. So it's more just kind of input and output. So I spend a lot of time trying to consume reading books that I'm interested in, watching TV shows I'm interested in, and talking to people. Like, I try to talk to people as much as I can in Chinese. That's mostly what I do.
At the end of the day, anyone learning any language, if you can find, you know, input or media that you're interested in, just like you were saying with the Japanese, anime and stuff, then that, you know, it doesn't feel like you're learning, right? You're enjoying the process.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so that's pretty much how I work on it. So if I see words I don't know, then I'll look it up, find out what that means, write it down, make a note, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm still always learning new words, new vocabulary, new grammar.
Right.
Or, you know, it feels like a never ending process. Like sometimes I have periods where I feel like my Chinese is great and I can say anything I want and I'm like happy with it. And then other times I feel like my Chinese sucks and I'm rubbish.
Depends who you're hanging out with, right?
Yeah. So it's like sometimes you go through periods where you think, you know, my Chinese is awful, you know, and I really need to spend more time on it. And then other times you feel like you're quite satisfied with it. And so it kind of comes and goes like with feelings, you know, like.
Right.
You never really truly feel like you've really mastered it, you know.
Right. No, makes sense.
I don't know if you've heard of this guy, but just to recommend someone,
there's
the most famous foreigner in China.
Is it the Dashan guy?
I don't know if you've interviewed him or not, but I was going to say he actually helped me out a little bit because when I was studying in Scotland, I hadn't come to Shanghai yet, and I was struggling to. I couldn't think in Chinese, so that was kind of the bit I was missing back then. And I actually wrote him an email asking for advice.
Yeah.
And he told me I should go to China and spend time in an immersion environment, and that would kind of conquer my problem.
Right.
Which was very nice of him because I thought he got so many emails. Like, you wouldn't.
Yeah, he's a huge celebrity there, right?
Yeah. So I wasn't expecting a reply, but he actually sent me a reply, you know, and I was like, well, thank you. So I thought I would just mention if you haven't heard of him or interviewed him, then. He's someone that's also quite inspiring as well.
Oh, absolutely.
When I sort of feel like I need more inspiration, sometimes I watch his videos on YouTube and I think, yeah, I'd like to be as good as him. You know, like I don't feel like I'm quite as good as him yet. And so I want to.
Yeah, also he's kind of like definitely the standard, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I thought I'd just mention that as well.
No, yeah, definitely. It's very interesting.
Thank
you. All right. Well, thank you so much then.
Thank you for talking. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.